This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome to Manifestation Therapy, your trusted source for wisdom on the universal principles and the transformative magic integrating manifestation with the people that you support. I'm your host, Judy, and I'm thrilled to embark on this enlightening journey with you. In every episode, we'll unravel the timeless secrets of the universe, explore the art of conscious creation, and dive deep into manifestation therapy's incredible potential. Whether you're a seasoned practitioner or just starting your quest for a more abundant and fulfilling life for yourself and your clients, this podcast will support your growth, inspiration, and empowerment. So let's ignite the power within, align our thoughts with the energy we desire, and be our best potential. Welcome to Manifestation Therapy's podcast. Welcome to today's episode of Manifestation Therapy, where we deep dive into practical, transformative approaches using the universal principles in support of practice to create the life desired, one intentional step at a time. I'm Judy, a trauma therapist and social worker, and I've developed Manifestation Therapy to help supportive professionals integrate the universal principles into their practice. Today, I want to talk about working with individuals with ADHD, or who are neurodivergent, and how to embrace the energy principles of manifestation in being someone that is neurodivergent with ADHD. Let's explore supportive techniques that cater to neurodivergent needs, walking through each step of manifestation therapy and integrating the universal principles that can empower anyone, neurodivergent or not, to manifest their true potential. To kick things off, let's talk about why manifestation therapy can be such a game changer, particularly for individuals with neurodivergent. Now, people with ADHD often struggle with things like focus, impulsivity, time management, and working memory. But here's the thing. These same individuals also tend to have a lot of creativity, passion, and resiliency. With manifestation therapy as a supportive professional, we can tap into these strengths and focus on working with, not against, the ADHD brain to set intentions, navigate challenges, and bring on real change. One of the guiding philosophies behind manifestation therapy is that we do not need to ignore our limitations. Instead, we want to use tools to purposely align our actions with our goals. We want to recognize and work through our unique challenges and find greater fulfillment. So let's dive into each step of the modality for manifestation therapy and look at how they relate to someone navigating neurodivergency, in particular, ADHD. First, we have the assessment phase. In traditional supportive practices, this would look like a biopsychosocial assessment, where we consider your biological, psychological, and social context. In manifestation therapy, we go even deeper. We want to be able to reflect with individuals and ask where they feel they are currently and what is influencing their journey in healing, potential, and reaching their goals. We want to understand their past experiences with regard to being neurodivergent, if they are diagnosed, self-diagnosed, or what has helped or hindered their successes. If they have experienced bullying, rejection, or acceptance from others because of their unique ways. They may have recurring patterns, like procrastination or impulsive decision-making, that have affected reaching their goals or even making goals. They may have problems with follow-through, and we want to use the law of rhythm to understand their patterns. For example, If we know that mornings are a challenging time, maybe we provide them with exercises to do for self-care, motivation building, or intentional action that occur in the afternoon or evening. We want it to be about understanding their unique rhythm and honoring it rather than changing it. So take time to assess their strengths as well as their weaknesses. We want to build on their creativity and resiliency because those are the qualities we'll lean on through the supportive process. We can create strengths and also support the neurodivergent minds to find their own strengths, even in how their brain works, rather than trying to fit them into a world of neurotypical behaviors, thought processes, emotional responses, and body experience. The ADHD individual may have thought for most of their life that there is something inherently wrong with them. These people are told from their caregivers, mentors, authority figures, even their friends and loved ones, that they may be too much, too dramatic, not behaving good enough, unacceptable, they do everything wrong, they do everything backwards, or that they're just plain bad. They become the scapegoats. And these are not true statements. These become imprinted messages. We need to work towards an understanding that the ADHD brain just functions differently, not wrongly. The energy of a mind, body, and emotional experience in an ADHD world is just energy in different frequencies and patterns than the neurotypical energy. And if we think of it as energy, it takes away from the wrong compartmentalization of intellect and emotion. It's just energy, and it's how their energy works. Think of culture and how various cultures have different perspectives, values, behaviors, and how these cultures shape the way people will approach activities, hold beliefs, or enter relationships. With ADHD brains, we often have a unique approach to tasks. Seeing patterns, generating creative solutions, and responding to impulses that neurotypical brains don't. Culture can influence how individuals interpret and engage in activities in a similar way. Except we don't interpret cultures as being wrong, we just know that they're different. In many Western cultures, people eat with a knife and fork. Well, in most of our Western cultures, we do. Well, in some Asian cultures, chopsticks are used. In other cultures, people eat with their fingers. Neither approach is really better or considered the one to do that is right. They're just different tools for achieving the same goal. They're accepted as ways that we eat a meal. People from each culture learn to use their specific utensils because that's what's customary and comfortable for them in their society, cultures, and families. Now think about someone with ADHD. They might approach a task like studying or organizing very differently than someone who is neurotypical. For instance, a neurotypical person might sit down, make a list, and go through the tasks in order. Like using a knife and fork might seem so simple. This person does the task in a process that to them seems simple. But for a person with ADHD, they might tackle things in a more spontaneous way, hopping between tasks based on what captures their attention at the moment, like trying different tools, using one that feels comfortable, and moving on to the next before going back to the first one. They may need music or background noise in order to focus, or they may require a very different mode of learning. They may have to do things hands-on. That doesn't make their way wrong. It just means it's different. Just like in different cultures, to eat with either forks or chopsticks are accepted, both ways of doing tasks are valid methods for achieving a goal. Each approach has its own strengths and understanding, and this can help us appreciate the diversity in how people naturally handle the same task. It's just about figuring out what works. Trying to force a neurodivergent brain to see things, do things, and be neurotypical only creates anxiety, grief, and very low self-perception. It creates a disconnect from ourself and others. Imagine if you saw someone eating with chopsticks, perfectly happy to do so, and you walked up to them and told them that they were wrong. Why would you do that? Especially if it were something that they value in their culture and what works for them. Most of us would even consider it pretty rude to tell an individual they are wrong for using their mode of eating. So why do people continue to try and force a neurodivergent brain to function in a neurotypical way? It's just how they work. It makes no sense. And it really does need to change. I realize it's a little different to look at the way we eat food as the way our brains work to learn how to task. But it's really, really important. And it's something that we need to look at in our children very early on and just accept how their brains are working either neurodivergently or neurotypically, rather than make it a big issue and something that they need to change. I'm going to use the word we here quite often because I self-identify as an ADHDer. I spent most of my childhood and youth thinking there was something wrong with how I thought and how I did things. I was constantly told I was doing things backwards. I spent the better part of my adult life trying desperately to understand the neurodivergent mind, just so I could understand my little brother, who was diagnosed with ADHD when he was very young and had a very severe case of it. But because we were so different in our own behaviors, I could never fathom that I could also be ADHD. However, the more I learned about neurodivergency, the more I understood the parallels with myself. It was actually only recently, when I began to see just how much ADHD has affected me and how true the diagnosis is for me as well, that I began to accept that side of me and to feel the need to officially be diagnosed, or at least maybe try medication. In fact, when I've done self-assessment tools, I've actually discovered that I get almost the highest scoring possible. The puzzle pieces have fit into place when I look at my history and how I organized my own tasks in my life, or the lack of organization that happened. I currently often have about 8 to 10 tasks on the go. Looking at my browsers, yep, I have multiple browser windows. The number of tabs open might horrify a neurotypical brain. Yet I know which each task is and what each one relates to. And boy, do I get frustrated if I lose an entire browser window. I don't listen to just one audiobook at a time. Usually I have like 4 on the go, and I choose which one to listen to given how I feel that morning, depending on my various moods, what tasks or intentions I have for each day. Yet, right now, I find my work-life balance has never been better. And the confidence and the pride that I'm taking in small successes, big successes, it grows every day. Don't get me wrong, I didn't always know how to embrace my multitasking or my hyperfocus, or as I was called, my scattered ways. I think I was even called ditz at one point. I kept trying to conform, I kept wanting to change, I kept wanting to be what was expected of me, to make my neurotypical counterparts proud of me. I have screwed up in so many ways in the past, especially with like my paperwork. There was even a time I lost my driver's license because I didn't do the proper paperwork on time. I was so resistant to it. Now, I say fuck it. And instead, I embrace my scattered ways as brilliance. And I see these aspects of my personality as what has actually created my success. And I make it work for me, and I make myself work with it rather than against it. I have stopped trying to change and become what other people are. An individual with ADHD might jump from task to task based on what feels most engaging in the moment. Rather than following a strict linear process, they might, to the outside observer, look disorganized. But for the person with ADHD or neurodivergency, it actually can be really effective in a way to harness their energy and stay motivated. It's all about figuring out what works for you energetically. Just as one's culture's approach to eating a meal may seem confusing or inefficient to someone else from another culture, the ADHD approach to tasking might seem unstructured to a neurotypical person. Yet both methods can be valid and productive with their own context. The key to understanding and valuing diverse ways of thinking and doing things, rather than assuming there's only one right way to approach a situation. If we're working with an individual that fits into a neurodivergent category, either diagnosed, suspected, or with self-declared traits, we need to be aware that they may need a different approach, a different type of understanding and support to accept that part of themselves. That is why the assessment step in manifestation therapy will help understand if an individual even is neurodivergent. By learning how they have approached tasks in the past and how they view themselves. Once we have the assessment, we can move on to the goal setting in manifestation therapy. With ADHD, setting a long-term goal can sometimes feel very overwhelming. Often achieving a goal isn't a linear approach. And because they may have had a life of being forced into this linear window, they may even be resistant to setting a goal. Or they may just not believe they can achieve it.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Anything. Consider this for a moment. Even asking an individual what they favor in color, scenery, or music can seem very overwhelming when they're neurodivergent. How do you choose just one of these when they're dependent on how your mood is, or what you desire that day, or what your intention is, even who they are with or where they are going can depend on the answer. Whereas a neurotypical person might answer very quickly any of those questions. For example, 20 years ago, I may have answered the question, "What is your favorite color?" with blanking out, because I'd be trying to think of what a neurotypical brain might answer. And I would know that they're supposed to just give one color. However, my brain doesn't work that way. And in my brain, I'm wanting to respond, well, it would be purple if I'm feeling spiritual. It's red when I want to feel confident. Sometimes it might be blue, depending on if I'm connecting to memories or feeling nostalgic. Then there are days where green is my favorite color if I feel really connected to growth or attraction. See? A neurotypical brain might spin with all that information, but in my mind, and often in other neurodivergent minds that I know, that makes perfect sense. So long-term goals may be more challenging to set, but often the question of where do you want to be in 5 years? Or what would you like to have, connect with, or experience in 5 years? Or 5 months? That may be a better way of setting a goal than the simple question of what do you want to achieve? When an individual that is neurodivergent can shift into a long-term goal in that way, it's also pretty common to get super excited and have these imaginative visions. They may find that it is challenging to break these big dreams into small steps at first. The end goal may be seen so clearly once it's in their mind that structuring a pathway to get there seems frustrating and overwhelming, because it's less interesting than what the end result may be. ADHD brains often need immediate rewards, so each small step could be a big win. Taking a big dream and breaking it into smaller goals with ways to celebrate when those smaller steps are achieved helps to connect with the potential. For example, I wanted to become a social worker. I wanted to get my degree. I had to take a math course, I can't even remember the name of it, but everybody out there that's a social worker probably understands. It was the research, and I was horrible at it. In fact, I had to take it twice just to pass. My big goal was to become a social worker. My small goal was to pass that stupid course that I hated. So I had to break down parts of the course into little wins in order to finish. And I didn't ace it by no means. But I got it done because I knew it was part of the bigger goal. Having tasks that are stimulating or intrinsically rewarding and supporting those with ADHD to excel at these smaller set goals that are genuinely interesting and meaningful to them is important to keep a level of motivation and interest going. So in doing that math course, the research course, I had to find ways to motivate myself through each step. Because neurodivergent brains like ADHDers do not always work in a step-by-step sequential way, progress may need to look like little bursts of intense focus or energy followed by periods of distraction or shifting of interest. At times, individuals that are ADHD can also become hyper-focused. I definitely do this. And when in this state, they work with intense concentration, sometimes for hours, even losing track of time or mishandling other responsibilities. It can be powerful in their progress towards goal achievement, but also unpredictable and can lead to burnout if it's not managed well. The little periods of distraction come into play here and are so important. Visual reminders, like a checklist, is great for what is perceived as procrastination that can happen with ADHD. It helps to see things as they get done and makes abstract goals more tangible. Putting things in phone calendars or notes and sticky notes are super helpful as long as you look at them. So you have to make sure that they're not going to put a sticky note on the mirror if they never look in the mirror. I say perceived procrastination because that is how the neurotypical sees it. What it really is to the neurodivergent is lost interest or having no interest to begin with. So no motivation has even been created. It's not about putting things off, it's about just having no desire. Building motivation and desire through connecting with the outcome of the process can help. I'm going to mention brain spotting here because it has been amazing in my practice to support people that are neurodivergent to find the motivation. Working with the law of rhythm rather than against it, meaning doing things in short bursts with timers set for those, and having focus sprints with little breaks for energy and attention is so helpful in accepting these patterns that the ADHD mind needs to follow. Then there's accountability. By creating accountability and sharing goals with others, or even sharing a calendar, can increase motivation. As long as the person that it's shared with is actually supportive and understanding of a neurodivergent, not going to be critical. It should never be punishable or negative because though this can motivate for small periods, it also decreases confidence and connection in the big picture. And it really, it doesn't support the interest. The desire gets lost when the criticism comes. People with ADHD often need excitement to stay motivated. So reframing goals every so often that will help renew fresh energy and keep those individuals engaged in the long term. Rather than focusing on the end result of the goal, focusing on the emotion of having it, the connection to others in succeeding, the ability to grow and succeed in positive, energetic ways. Not just focusing on the winning, although I know I've mentioned how important that is, but all of the aspects of it to become complete. As previously mentioned, I did say it's important to celebrate, and it is. The small wins, the big wins, and even the little mistakes and failures, because those are lessons. Rather than allowing these to become secretive fuck-ups and bring on shame, remorse, and cause neglect of motivation, it's important to look at long-term gratification that may be difficult. But celebrating the lessons in progress can also be rewarding and bring satisfaction towards ongoing efforts. For neurodivergent brains, building awareness of cognitive processes, emotional responses, body experience, behaviors, and relationships often looks a little bit different than the neurotypical approach. Due to differences in executive functioning, attention regulation, and processing, the ADHD brain may experience unique challenges and strengths in self-awareness work. I know from my own brain, I do not think in a linear way, or at least not in a way a neurotypical might. I have rapid-fire thoughts, which to me, they make perfect sense, and I see them in a linear fashion. I can connect the dots. But I could be talking to my partner about what we may have for dinner one moment, And literally within seconds, I'm letting him know that our daughter had a cough and I'm worried. To me, this may make perfect sense. So let's say we were talking about making spaghetti. I thought about the process involved, and then I thought about the smell of the sauce, which connected me to how my mom used to make her sauce, which connected me to how my grandmother's garden of tomatoes. Then it connected me to a memory of cutting a tomato for my daughter in the garden, which connected me to her big smile, which connected me to talking about something funny the day before with her when she coughed. To me, it makes perfect sense, but he cannot understand why, first of all, I switched subjects almost in the same sentence from making spaghetti for dinner into our daughter coughing. The ADHD mind may experience frequent shifts in attention, which can make tracking and understanding even their own cognitive patterns more challenging, especially if they've always tried to shut off their awareness. If they haven't attempted self-awareness or understanding of their own patterns, it's quite often because they've been told their patterns have something wrong with them. Many people with ADHD may struggle to stay in tune with their thought process, especially in high stimulation environments or when multiple ideas compete for their attention. Although, when they embrace this part of themselves and go with the flow rather than attempting to change it or be different, it can actually be so useful. With my best friend, we regularly have multiple conversations on the go at once. It works perfectly for us, and we both understand it because we're both neurodivergent. Most of my relationships with friendships have been. We track these multiple conversations in sync. I think it's a great talent. It's actually quite like a superpower. The law of rhythm suggests that everything has natural cycles. For an ADHD mind, awareness might not be a constant process. Rather, it can be something done in waves. Some days, self-awareness flows naturally, while other days, focus might be harder to achieve. Embracing this rhythm can help ADHD individuals work with their brain's natural cycles instead of against them. One of the biggest issues that a neurotypical individual may have with a neurodivergent is their lack of understanding for the way a neurodivergent regulates emotionally. This is because they don't understand that for a neurodivergent brain, the speed with which they experience emotion and the intensity is amped up. Because of the imprinted messages like stop feeling or negative experiences related to their emotional and body sensations, or because the neurotransmitters being released or reduced from the ADHD brain causes hyperfocus on emotions and makes the emotion seem all-consuming. Or they might have difficulty processing it in real time. They can disconnect over time from the cognitive, emotional, and body connection, and their behaviors just do not align with what is being considered norm. I don't say normal because I really hate that word, but the norm. What if instead of trying to change the neurodivergent emotional experience, we just build on their self-awareness, their acceptance, and allow them to process and accept as they need to? When I was able to understand my emotions and find forgiveness and space and compassion for it, I didn't need to control it anymore. I was just able to allow it to come and go. That attempt to try to control it, to try to stop it, to try to change it was so exhausting that instead it would just control me. It's an amazing process, and everyone has the ability to actually truly achieve emotional regulation. Another consideration is that the law of polarity reminds us that opposites exist in everything, including our emotions. For the ADHD individuals, recognizing the spectrum of emotional experiences, intense highs and lows, can actually provide perspective and help us embrace the full range of feelings without getting stuck in one extreme. So techniques like mindfulness can help us pause, name the emotion, and reframe these as temporary states. Experiencing emotion and thought as just something that happens means our dysregulation is no longer who we are. It's just what we are experiencing. So we can just learn to experience things in a different way. People with neurodivergent brains may have a less consistent connection with their physical sensations. This disconnect can make it very difficult to notice signs of hunger, fatigue, or physical stress. Hyperactivity, or the need to move constantly, can also mask or override other bodily signals, creating a delay in recognizing and responding to them. Now, the law of vibration states that everything is in constant motion, including our thoughts, emotions, and body sensations. For someone with ADHD working to tune in to their body's unique vibration, its energy levels, physical needs, and even the urge to move can help to understand how to present within the body, can help to understand how to stay present within the body. Grounding exercises, body scans, or somatic practices can help ADHD individuals develop this awareness without feeling constrained by traditional stillness-based approaches. We all know, at least those of us that understand neurodivergency, how it can affect impulse control. This means that sometimes we respond to situations, people, events in a very triggered, impulsive way. We may say things we later regret, we may raise our voices, or even read or interpret situations in a way that later makes no sense. We may do things we later regret, or react to things that normally would not have seemed so necessary, especially when something triggers our emotions at an intensity we just were not expecting, or catches us off guard, even in so much as interrupting us when we are hyper-focused, or triggering our impatience. I'm not making excuses here for this behavior, but there's a biological, scientific explanation in it. Our brains just do not function in the same way as a neurotypical. So all of these situations mean that our neurotransmitters are firing really fast to bypass the neurotypical ability to trigger impulse control. We instead just seem to completely lack it, but we don't. It's just that our behaviors end up seemingly reactively deliberate at times, and they're not. We have a harder time learning to pause and reflect on our actions to the point that many neurotypicals consider our behaviors as lacking in any concern for consequence. In reality, the consequences are so heavy. The law of cause and effect is so heavy for the neurodivergence because often the way we are raised is that every way that our brain organizes stimuli and our behaviors is wrong. That we are supposed to somehow shift all of this into a behavior and response of a neurotypical brain. It's like someone telling us that they should not have blue eyes because blue eyes are not the normal. We can't just change our eye color. We don't do that. So why do so many continually try to make an ADHD or neurodivergent brain become neurotypical? It's ridiculous, really. And imagine if we just supported our children when their brains are developing and we discover that they're neurodivergent, and for that we need to have more screening in place, instead of telling them to change, their confidence grows, their ability to be aware grows, do you think they'll still have that impulsivity and the lack of ability to emotionally regulate? I think it would kind of come with their development as opposed to them constantly trying to work against it. What we can do is learn to celebrate our differences and embrace the way our brain organizes, responds, and functions to the point where we can learn to enhance what it can do instead of blaming ourselves for what it has done in the past that got us into these consequences. When we learn to embrace the way we work, we can learn to make the way we work happen for us instead of work against us. The law of cause and effect highlights the relationship between actions and outcomes. For people with ADHD, recognizing this principle can support self-awareness by helping them trace their behaviors back to triggers or initial thoughts. For example, identifying that stress often leads to impulsive decision-making can help them introduce small pause points to break the chain of automatic responses. Notice it's not about stopping, it's just about understanding. We don't need to become neurotypical. We just need to understand what our triggers are and what they lead to and how we can function or how we can learn in order to make that happen. The law of compensation will in turn bless us with more possibilities for peace, to build our awareness, and to find our abilities. ADHD often will also influence relationships by affecting how we communicate, our emotional expressions, our attentiveness. People with ADHD may struggle to stay present in conversations, leading to misunderstandings or feelings of disconnection from others. The tendency to hyperfocus or become distracted may also impact how we connect with our loved ones. The law of divine oneness reminds us that we're all connected. This principle can help people with ADHD feel more grounded in relationships by remembering that even in moments of distraction or frustration, they are still valued and connected to those around them. Practicing empathy, forgiveness, and understanding, both for ourselves and others, can help strengthen relationships even when challenges arise. One of the best communication strategies for an ADHD mind is to embrace empathetic communication. For example, if we realize we have become a little lost in a conversation, we can say something like, "I hope I do not offend you. I think what you were saying is really important. I just need to explain that I have ADHD and sometimes get easily distracted. It's my issue and I feel really frustrated when it happens, but would you mind repeating that last little bit? Because I am interested." Our distractibility has nothing to do with the other individual's words or affect. We simply need some time to get back on track. Self-awareness exercises don't need to be lengthy or intense. Using short intervals, like 5 minutes of focused breathing or quick journal entries, can fit better with the attention span of someone with ADHD. Self-awareness doesn't always happen in a step-by-step process, especially for ADHD brains. Being flexible with the approach, allowing for exploration, and not expecting perfect awareness every day can create a more sustainable path. I'm sure anyone out there has heard that mindfulness and meditation is helpful for the ADHD brain. And I am sure many, at least if you're like myself, have said that it's impossible for you. But it honestly isn't. In fact, when we figure out how we work and what works for us, meditation and mindfulness not only can be possible, but we can actually excel at it. Sometimes it isn't about being silent and unmoving. For some, that stillness can seem so challenging. Mindful practices may need to be incorporating some form of movement, like walking meditations or dancing. That way, the ADHD individual can connect with their bodies and emotions without feeling restricted. When hyperfocus does occur, channeling it into self-awareness activities, such as an in-depth journaling session or focused reflection on emotions, can actually create breakthroughs in understanding their own process. For individuals with ADHD, self-awareness is a journey that may look a little different from the traditional model. Embracing the flexibility, the spontaneity, the creativity in their approach. By integrating universal principles, they can find ways to honor their unique ways of experiencing the world while staying connected to their goals and values. Through tools and strategies that align with their natural tendencies, a neurodivergent individual can develop a sustainable, empowering practice of self-awareness. They can learn to clear and shift those old negative patterns that hold them back, those patterns that create a loop of shame and frustration. And instead, they can build on self-acceptance by replacing old imprinted messages that do not serve them with positive affirmations and newfound confidence. As I have mentioned, neurodivergent individuals often encounter specific challenges with focus, motivation, and consistency, which can create a negative self-belief pattern and becomes deeply rooted in feelings of being different, less than, not enough, or wrong. We support these individuals through clearing and shifting not only of these negative cycles, but also anything that holds them back from their full potential by seeing the possibility of their potential. The ADHD mind may have faced years of messaging that they're unfocused, that they're lazy, that they're procrastinating, that they're disorganized. And these labels, which are sadly often received from in school, in medical areas, at work, or even in family environments, can turn into internalized beliefs that hold us back from our full potential. The neurodivergent brain, which craves novelty and is often more fluid, adaptable, and nonlinear, might be burdened by trying to fit into a rigid linear expectation of how goals should be approached, of how self-awareness can be found, of self-acceptance. In manifestation therapy, it's crucial to acknowledge and clear those imprints so that they don't act as a subconscious barrier to achieving goals. We don't want people to conform. Rather, we want them to shine as their authentic, unique selves. With the law of divine oneness, we want to support our clients to understand they are part of a greater whole, that others actually share their differences, share their struggles and experiences, and that they can contribute with their uniqueness in valuable ways. What communities celebrate neurodivergency? Who do you know that is a famous, intelligent, successful neurodivergent? This can guide clients to see their neurodivergent brain in a new light, including being productive, creative, and most importantly, worthy with the connection to others. I'm not going to name names here, but there's so many out there. And a lot of them are current billionaires. Just saying. Looking at the law of vibration, we can support those with ADHD brains to understand that their energy and focus doesn't need to be neurotypical in order to match societal norms to be positive. Activities that feel less restrictive and involve their pleasure, curiosity, excitement, and connection can support these individuals to stay motivated and grateful. The law of correspondence, which connects our outer world to our inner world, is important for the neurodivergent clients. We can encourage them to look at their inner dialogue and align it to self-compassion, acceptance, and understanding. They can use affirmations, positive statements, and forgiveness of past experiences in order to resonate with the approaches to their goals, in order to ask, allow, and set intentional action to guide them into releasing those negative messages and replace them with acceptance of who they are and how they're shifting in progress. The law of cause and effect can resonate with clients who have neurodivergency in a state of discouragement from past inconsistency. Instead, we want to focus on their strengths, their little successes, and provide understanding of how this doesn't need to follow a linear path. Sometimes not following a linear path is exactly how it should be. In my own life, I have often been told I've done everything backwards. In some ways, this is perfectly true. But it also led me on a path I am today, and I wouldn't trade any of it. I went to school right out of high school, although it did take me extra time to graduate for a lot of different reasons, including, I won't go into that, but let's just say I had a lot of trauma. I both flunked out and hated the structured approach to university when I first went. I didn't want to take elective courses I cared nothing about. I didn't want to take English. I didn't even want to take Greek mythology, although it did interest me. I wanted to study psychology. That's why I was there. And I only was allowed to take one course my first year. I didn't understand that, so I struggled with focus. Plus, there was a lot going on with the trauma that I'd been through and more that was surfacing. And my new ability to party whenever I wanted to, in any way that I wanted, was really helping me cope with all that. My partner and I were together when I was in my 20s, after dropping out, traveling, yada yada. And it was disastrous. I was a broken bird. He was angry at the world. And we ended up breaking all communication. I went through some more stuff. I went through some more career possibilities. And we ended up hooking up again when I was in my early 30s. Was it late? I think it was late. Blah, blah, blah. We ended up hooking up again when I was in my late 30s. And that's when we had my first biological daughter. Then we broke up. I had finished college. I went back. I got 3 more degrees because I found something that interested me. And eventually we got back together, moved in together. And then COVID hit and we bought a house. Then I had another baby in my 40s. So we did things in a way that most would consider very confusing and backwards. But for us, it worked. It fit us. In fact, we both agree that we likely wouldn't have made it if we had stayed together way back when. So while some may see it as dysfunctional, I only see the purpose behind it. The law of polarity, with its opposite ends, may help clients with neurodivergent brains understand that the contrast between what works and what doesn't is not about failure, but about learning. Support the understanding of different methods in goal setting and routine and action and allowing and asking in acceptance and awareness with positivity, empowering, and compare it to what feels negative and draining with what feels energetic and awakening. The law of perpetual transformation of energy supports the neurodivergent client to understand that their energy can change, just as they can move from frustration to curiosity or distraction to focus. That the changes they experience are not only acceptable, but can be amazing. By supporting the neurodivergent brain to learn, experience mindfulness and grounding in a way that works for them, they can clear the belief that they are stuck and simply embrace the flow of energy shifting. And mindfulness and meditation is not about being quiet. It's not about turning off your brain. And this is so difficult for people to grasp, even though so many people say it. It's okay that your thoughts are all over the place. It's okay that you have 100 different thoughts. It's not about turning them off. It's just about being aware that it's happening. In part, we want to encourage our clients with neurodivergent brains to just observe their thought patterns, to just experience a curiosity and a self-awareness of when those thoughts become distracted, when they ruminate, or when they become overwhelming. Focusing on the emotions that come and allowing these rather than finding them wrong or bad. To connect with the body and what it is doing in those moments, or when we have that impulsive need to move. Those moments of discomfort, or when their thoughts are distractive or less positive. I find that many individuals that are neurodivergent are really impacted by some of their five senses. They may have powerful responses in their body, in their emotions, and even in their memories or thoughts related to connecting with different textures, touches, smells, sounds, tastes, or even visuals. This is an amazing skill. It's a superpower. It isn't something negative at all. And supporting these individuals to understand that they can use this as their energy to shift, to attract, think of the law of attraction, or to connect, think of the law of resonance, and create the ability to shift into what they want, the law of perpetual transformation of energy, into those new patterns, the law of rhythm, with these skills of heightened senses in a way that neurotypical brains often struggle with. Part of this process is to build on self-awareness or the acknowledgement and awareness of which of their senses are most powerful as a tool to use. Quite often, they have spent most of their lives feeling like the powerful reaction in their bodies, minds, and emotions in relation to the five senses has been wrong or weird or makes them get into trouble, have rejection happen, or should be something they need to shut down. For instance, sounds irritate me. I was always told to get over it when an annoying sound, like someone tapping, kicking, clicking, humming, was, and that it was just something I had to get over and accept, because it was always me that was the problem. Which, sure, is definitely part of the experience. It's not me making the sound. And other people shouldn't change their behavior to relax my emotion. However, I now find ways that help support me to accept that it's happening and try to find compassion for myself in the moment, instead of trying to shut it down or shut down how I'm feeling. I can understand it. Don't get me wrong, it's still super annoying. But I've also learned that through guided meditations, sounds and guided voices can really bring me into a deeper state of visualization, body-mind connection, and it accelerates the impact of the process. I've learned that sounds can effectively be used to change my mood, both negatively and positively. Music, meditations, imagining someone's voice, my child's laughter can instantly shift my emotional experience and quiet my thoughts. It's pretty powerful. Not to say that neurotypical brains cannot do the same thing, they can, but with the neurodivergent brain, it is often very powerful, very quick, and in a way that I just haven't seen the neurotypical brain do to the same degree. So, support the individual with the neurodivergency in discovering how they can use their five senses and their previously considered glitches that were considered negative into an awareness and a positive frame. I already mentioned sound, but textures can be used to ground individuals too. Rather than focusing on a texture that bothers them, like the feeling of a wet spoon, it could be focusing on how soft their favorite sweater is in moments of discomfort or anxiety. Or you can pair something that is a negative texture, like that wet spoon, with something that they no longer want to do as a habit. Like when you have the urge to pick up a cigarette, can you think of the touch of that wet spoon? If they really can't stand certain tastes, like sour, they can use that flavor of a cinnamon heart or thinking of their favorite sweet in moments of disassociation to reconnect. If they are sensitive to smells, then they can have a powerful core memory of the smell of someone or somewhere that they love, like the ocean, to bring on peace and quiet. Or maybe it's the smell of coffee in the morning. These things can help motivate. They can be integrated into a practice to support getting back on track or finishing a task. The major part of all of this is that we need to accept, encourage, and provide a safe space for ourselves and for the client with the neurodivergent brain to simply be who they are. Rather than trying to force change to make their brain work in a different way to suit our needs or the neurotypical needs, we need to provide them time and reflection to understand that who they are is amazing. It's not at all a dysfunction. They can learn to be authentically themselves, confident, and then they can reach their highest potential. With manifestation therapy, we want to support all individuals through asking intentional action and allowing their potential to shine through in order to achieve their desired goals. Part of this is to understand that we need to support individuals with ADHD in simply understanding they are deserving and worthy of asking for their goals. They have the potential to reach their goals as much as any other, and that includes if their goals shift, change, or involve multiple paths. Intentional action with a neurodivergency can include using visual aids like mind maps, chunking tasks, as previously mentioned, or using timers and alarms to promote self-care and taking breaks when hyper-focused, journaling, or using apps on their smartphones that can track progress, set goals, or do mindful exercises related to their goals. Support the client with ADHD in aligning their thoughts, actions, and energy to achieve their goals and to be better aware when they may be reverting back to those old imprinted messages in both behavior, stress responses, emotions, and thought patterns. Brain spotting, as I've mentioned, is an amazing way to clear old imprinted messages, but also to integrate new affirmations and connect clients in psychotherapy or in coaching to potential inspired actions they can take. It has this, I'll call it magical. I know it's not magical. It has science behind it, but it's this magical energetic way of supporting individuals in finding their natural intuition and acceptance of their authentic selves. We can support our clients to allow their goals to come without constantly experiencing frustration, overwhelm, or distraction by supporting their ability to learn to trust in timing, trust in themselves, and release control over how things are coming. Patience is one of the most challenging values to integrate into outer and inner worlds for individuals that may be neurodivergent. There are questions in ADHD assessments that ask if waiting your turn is challenging, or including often interrupting others to finish their sentences, or waiting for something or someone and dealing with slow lines or even slow internet. Asking these questions to my clients, both youth and adults, most would always respond that they aren't really a problem for them. I always found myself quite surprised. I couldn't understand how others did not find these situations problematic. This was actually a bit of my first reality check that I may actually be more neurodivergent than I previously considered. It isn't that the individual with ADHD is filled with rage or should be categorized as impatient or wrong for responding that these things are part of their experience. It isn't that they need to be therapeutically changed and altered. We as a society need to understand that these are not symptoms of a disorder. They are symptoms of a neurodivergent brain, which is not something that is wrong. It is simply different. Understanding that this impatient symptom is the individual with neurodivergency and how they look at coping in a different way. First off, the prefrontal cortex or executive functioning adult brain of an individual with ADHD may behave differently. Impulse control isn't always prepared to act in some situations in the same speed or the way neurotypical brains do. Then, considering dopamine levels for reward and motivation that may be lower in the brain of someone with ADHD and affects their ability to stay focused and motivated. This means that waiting for a reward or outcome becomes pretty challenging. Time perception for an individual with ADHD can seem blinded, so estimating how long things may take, staying on schedule, and not reacting in frustration when they don't happen can be a challenge. Again, it's just how the brain is working, not something that's punishable or a dysfunction. Because an individual with neurodivergency can struggle to regulate emotions and may have intense highs and lows at times, they may feel they simply can't manage their emotions. Again, they may have been told their entire life that they're impossible, bad, misbehaved, or stupid for not being able to regulate the actions in the same way that a neurotypical counterpart can. It's not that they can't. They simply need to learn different strategies in order to understand how. People with ADHD can be easily overstimulated by their environment, which makes it challenging to stay calm and patient in situations where they require waiting or dealing with delays. Rather than trying to control what is happening or not happening in the current moment and in the how of reaching the end result, the neurodivergent individual can use the law of relativity to compare their instances when they had to wait for a reward or expectation and how things may have occurred during that time of waiting that were positive or played an important role in the quality of positive outcome. That brings gratitude in manifestation therapy as something that is vital. With the neurodivergent brain, individuals may have often been programmed with imprinted messages focused on negativity and lack. Learning to find gratitude will support a shift in focus and growth to lead to the positive potential and goal success. Creating a simple habit where at the end of each day, they write down three things they're grateful for or recite them throughout the day. They don't have to be deep or heartfelt, although with progress, this may naturally happen, but it can be just about finding gratitude in the shower for hot water, or the great smell of shampoo, or the quiet of the morning. That kind of gives a sum up on how to work with clients with neurodivergency. But as a therapist myself with ADHD, it's important to consider how to work through the universal principles as a professional with ADHD too. Our internal world will shape our external world. I have found that as my professional life enhances and expands, so does my acceptance and understanding of my neurodivergency and the ability to accept all my own quirks and imprinted messages that came from living with undiagnosed ADHD for so long. I may be self-diagnosed now, but I have learned to let go of regrets and resentments when I look back and consider the possibilities. If I had only been supported, accepted, and encouraged in my childhood and youth with regards to being neurodivergent. Instead, I have been able to find ways that my path led me on an improved understanding, improved successes, and learning to integrate my current practice, personal life, and goals. If we feel chaotic inside, we tend to see chaos around us. Cultivating calm and clarity within, even in small ways, reflects back into our outer lives. I may still have a mind that is different, and I am constantly looking at various ways, things, making new plans, But I have learned to love this part of me and to make it work into a balance of my life instead of always resenting it and trying to adapt to normal ways. These days, I'm doing better than I ever imagined possible. So celebrate your own ADHD and neurodivergency. Look at the ways it has enhanced your personal life, your professional abilities, and how it will help you to better support and balance through the work and personal life you do have instead of trying to change who you are. And I realize that was really long, but that's a wrap. Until next time, remember to be your best potential. Manifestation Therapy, Universal Principles in Supportive Practice. Don't forget to like and share. If you have any questions, just reach out and I will let you know.